whatever you do when it comes to subsistence, don't say we'll let the federal government do it.
The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention opens with a focus on subsistence rights. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 18th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Sitka residents turn to wood-fired heat.
Some of these stoves, the efficiency is well over 90%. So when you think about that, that's pretty darn efficient. That's better than any oil fire boiler.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Every day, over 4,000 infants and toddlers go to sleep in child care programs across Alaska in unsafe cribs. The Alaska Community Foundation is partnering with THREAD to replace unsafe cribs in licensed child care programs across Alaska with new safe cribs. To help, donate today, and the Alaska Community Foundation will provide a one-to-one match of your donation. To donate, visit alaskacf.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Community Foundation.
The Alaska Federation of Natives Convention kicked off today with speeches, fanfare, and a bit of fireworks. The annual event takes place at Anchorage's Dena'ina Center. This year's theme is Success Beyond Barriers. Keynote speaker Carol Wren, a young woman now working with the Cook Inlet Tribal Council, spoke about how her life took her from a village background to a job helping other Native people achieve success. She thanked those who mentored her along the way.
I've had supervisors, mentors, and co-workers along the way who've guided my work, who've pushed me to think critically, and they've challenged me to use my voice and engage in fearless dialogue to address problems and find solutions. I've been given the opportunity to question and explore my Native identity and what it means to me. We, as Native people, have overcome and adapted to a rapid changes in our world. We've survived assimilation practices, we've adapted to the cash economy, we've worked to maintain our unique cultural identity and worldview while also adapting to the Western worldview and way of life.
Wren is the great-granddaughter of Native healer Della Keats. Governor Sean Parnell and his wife Sandy spoke as a couple, keying in on the value of the state's youth. Parnell said Alaska's youth are the state's greatest treasure and also talked about his administration's initiative against domestic violence and sexual abuse. First Lady Sandy Parnell addressed the difficult topic of sex trafficking, which she said is one of the greatest threats to Alaska's young people.
Girls from rural communities coming to Anchorage are vulnerable, especially if their support system fails or housing falls through and they find themselves on the street. Traffickers entice girls by offers of new clothing, getting hair and nails done, and a place to stay. They're told they're special, and that they will be taken care of. Sometimes during this grooming stage, while things are still going well, the girls are told to recruit family members or friends. But then it turns ugly and very, very violent.
AFN President Julie Kitka kept her remarks brief. Kitka reminded the gathering that Alaska Natives, despite great success in many areas, still face hurdles. She pointed to budget cuts in Washington, D.C., and the effect the cuts could have on Native organizations.
Regardless of who is elected, the fiscal cliff we all read about in the papers and see on television will remain. There is no protection for Native American programs from these automatic cuts, so we can only work hard to encourage the members of Congress and the new administration to solve these financial problems in our country, but not resolve it on the back of poor people in our country or on the back of Native Americans.
Kitka warned that Alaska Natives face a 7.8% cut in funding for programs, including health care. Congressman Don Young, who is running for re-election, provided the fireworks in the morning and took the opportunity during his address to AFN to warn Alaska Natives that disunity is the way to failure. Young told the group that conflicts between different Native groups need to be resolved internally, saying conflicts over subsistence fish are an example. He said Alaska Natives could approach the state for changes in subsistence management, and he said depending on the federal government to solve subsistence problems is a mistake.
Whatever you do when it comes to subsistence, don't say we'll let the federal government do it. You're just stepping into a frying pan out of the fire. You will lose all your rights. If you want to manage game, ask to manage it on your own lands. Why not let the state have the management as they should under the Constitution, the state of Alaska, the management on federal lands, and kick the Park Service out, Fish and Wildlife out, and all the rest of them?
About 25 subsistence fishermen along the Kuskokwim River will soon head to trial for alleged illegal fishing during closures this past summer. As KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports, many of them are being represented for free by a civil rights law firm.
The first trial is scheduled for October 29th in the Bethel District Court. During a pretrial conference Tuesday, the fishermen refused the state's plea deals again and said they would rather go to trial than plead guilty for subsistence fishing for their families. A handful of fishermen are being represented by state public defenders, but most of them, 22 in all, are being represented pro bono by the Northern Justice Project, a private law firm focusing on civil rights cases. James Davis is an attorney with a law firm.
When we saw the Yupik fishermen being cited or arrested this past summer, it seemed to be outrageous.
Davis says he used to live in the Bethel area, which taught him how critical subsistence is for the Yupik people.
It's just too an important issue to have, I think, brave fishermen who have, you know, put themselves in harm's way to go to court without a lawyer helping them.
The 22 fishermen Davis is representing had their charges reduced to citations or violations and were not provided public defenders. Bethel District Attorney June Stein said the charges were reduced because those fishermen only committed the crime of fishing with wrong-sized nets. She says the other fishermen who are being represented by public defenders are being charged with misdemeanors for other fishing violations. Each fisherman will be tried separately. They are all being charged with illegal salmon fishing this past summer. Several villages up and down the Kuskokwim organized to fish on June 20th during a 12-day closure. Some fishermen were encouraged to do so by their elders. Some tribes drafted resolutions saying they had the right to fish as sovereign governments and sent them to state and federal governments. The fishermen contend that they were subsistence fishing for their families for their winter food supplies. The trials are expected to run through mid-November. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
The State Department of Natural Resources is preparing to lease more than 13,000 acres near Skwentna for coal exploration. Bill Cole with DNR's mining section says the potential lease sale has been prompted by the request of an interested party, the Alaska Energy Company.
The reason that this decision has been written, again, it's a preliminary decision, is that we did receive a request from a company wanting coal leases over specific ground in that area, which is described in the decision. And we have looked at that in response to their request and written this preliminary decision.
The area, called the Canyon Creek Lease, is located about 18 miles from Skwentna near Shell Lake. The potential coal lease area has been surveyed for mineral quality and is rated as high potential, Cole says. A public hearing for the Canyon Creek competitive coal lease sale will be held Tuesday, November 13th in Anchorage. The public is also invited to submit written comments by November 21st. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a painting project that's bringing Alaskan natives together in Anchorage.
There are people that are part Tlingit and part Inupiaq that are saying, I have to paint a little bit on the Inupiaq part and I have to paint a little bit on the Tlingit part.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough has fewer local options to reduce air pollution from wood burning following the passage of a citizen ballot proposition earlier this month. Proposition 3 bans the borough from regulating heating devices. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
Prop 3 was aimed at striking down a borough's smoke opacity standard and fines for violating it, but there's been an unintended consequence. The ban on regulation of heating devices has resulted in the borough halting a program credited with removing 900 older model polluting wood stoves. The voluntary changeout program offers residents up to $2,500 to cover the cost of new, cleaner-burning stoves. It mandates what models can be purchased and requires turning over the old stove to the borough for destruction. Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins says it should not surprise people that the program is a casualty of Prop 3.
It was anticipated. It was discussed. The questions asked, well, you know, why didn't the public know? Well, you know, the air quality plan was out there in borough code. And that has restrictions in it. And restrictions, we have to remove those in any way, any of the restrictions that we have.
People can still apply to take advantage of the change-out program through Friday. Mayor Hopkins says the borough can process those applicants before the assembly rescinds the borough air quality regulations next week. He says the additional applications could exhaust most of what remains of the $3 million the state legislature allocated for the Fairbanks program. Meanwhile, the borough is looking at other options to reduce wintertime fine particulate pollution. Hopkins says non-regulatory options to reduce smoke include paying people not to burn wood.
Would the public want to participate in a fully voluntary program to, say, not burn wood on days when we have exceedances forecasted? So what we're trying to do is look at the numbers and trying to avoid exceedance days. That's what is so to speak, nailing us on air quality.
Hopkins says an ordinance is in the works, but that it won't be forwarded to the assembly for consideration if the public isn't interested. A public hearing is scheduled for November 8th. The borough and state are working on a plan to get Fairbanks into compliance with Environmental Protection Agency fine particulate standards. The state has its own emissions regulations and enforcement. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Air Quality Program Director Alice Edwards says it's looking at how it can step in to make up for lost borough regulations and programs. But a compliance plan won't be ready for submission to EPA by a December 14th deadline.
We still hope that working with the borough that we can have a plan out for people to be commenting on and looking at in that December timeframe. We were hoping that we would have a plan submitted to EPA by next summer.
Edwards says federal sanctions do not start to take effect until 18 months past the deadline. The first sanction requires a 2-for-1 offset for new air permits, meaning any proposal would have to include reduction of pollution at an existing facility. At 2 years out, federal highway funding can also be reduced. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Wood Energy is making a comeback in Sitka. With fuel prices approaching record highs, locals are returning to firewood and to other forms of wood fuel lumped under the term biomass. This Saturday, the community is holding a Wood Energy Fair to reintroduce residents to wood heat in the home. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
When I first moved to Sitka, I had a wood stove, a Blaze Queen, that got so warm it would turn us right out of our living room, even on the coldest winter days. Like hundreds of other Sitkans, I took advantage of low fuel prices in the mid-1990s, around 65 cents per gallon, installed a modern oil stove, and turned out my Blaze Queen, out the door, down the steps, and into the back of someone's pickup truck. Cutting, hauling, splitting, and stacking firewood became a part of my past. Now, Marcella Perrier, president of the Sitka Conservation Society, would like to make it a part of my future. I asked him if much had changed about using firewood in the last 20 years.
Probably the correct answer with that would be no.
But La Perrier says there's an upside.
I personally like burning with wood. It's good exercise. The old saying, wood heats you more than once, is definitely true. I personally like going out and cutting wood. I like stacking wood. And crazy as it sounds, I hand split all my wood. I don't use a power splitter, but that's my cardiovascular exercise, and it's cheaper than a gym membership and just as good for you, and you really feel like you've accomplished something.
Despite being surrounded by forest, Sitka does not have large amounts of firewood available. La Perrier purchased 20 cords of dry hemlock last year from Wrangell. Before the APC pulp mill closed in Sitka in 1993, residents salvaged a lot of firewood from beeches. After wood broke loose from the huge log rafts that were towed right through town. La Perrier says regional sawmills might help plug this gap, but not with firewood.
All the wood processors here in southeast Alaska, since the pulp mills have been closed, they primarily push their sawdust and wood scrap up into a pile and burn it outside. I mean, how crazy is that when we could be making pellets and burning those pellets in our homes.
Only one mill in Southeast in Ketchikan is making pellets from wood waste, but the market is growing. The Sea Alaska office building in Juneau installed pellet boilers and has been running them for some time. Now, the Coast Guard Air Station in Sitka has installed a pellet system, which is currently undergoing testing. Pellets for homeowners in Sitka have been available in relatively small quantities from local retailers for years. One definite area of improvement in wood energy is the equipment itself. LaPerriere says there will be several wood stove retailers and contractors on hand at the fair to talk about some of the major advances in stove technology. According to LaPerriere, the numbers are impressive.
Some of these stoves, the efficiency is well over 90%. They've got the reburner and the catalytic converter. They're calling them hybrids, and I believe the efficiency is like 92%. So when you think about that, that's pretty darn efficient. That's better than any oil fire boiler.
LaPerriere says he pulls the catalytic converter out of his own wood stove two or three times a year and washes it in the kitchen sink, a 15-minute chore that makes a dramatic difference in the flue gases from his stove. LaPerriere and the Sitka Conservation Society consider wood stoves to be carbon neutral, since the replacement trees absorb large amounts of carbon, especially in their first 75 years of growth. But there are other environmental organizations, most notably Greenpeace, who point to data suggesting that the carbon from wood burning stays around far longer. But what's not in dispute is this. Sitka has reached the end of its hydro capacity and was forced to turn on diesel generators last winter. The upcoming Blue Lake expansion project may take that hydro plant offline for up to a year. LaPerriere believes we could be paying a lot more for electricity in the interim.
And I don't know about the rest of you, I don't mind putting a sweater on, but I don't really want to live in a 50-degree house. And to me, it just makes a lot of sense to be burning a wood stove.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The National Weather Service, in cooperation with the Bureau of Land Management, installed a new weather station at Wickersham Dome along the Elliott Highway late last month. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, before now, there was no available weather data between Fox and Live and Good.
28 miles up the Elliott Highway, a new weather station is collecting all kinds of data, including current temperatures, relative humidity, wind speed, and information about wind gusts. National Weather Service meteorologist Ed Plum says he had a few reasons to champion the project.
It's at elevation, so we can get an idea of what the winds are doing, like along the road, you know, when we may have some blowing snow. Also, that location is under our radar, our Doppler radar coverage. So during the summertime, when our radar is showing that there should be precipitation falling, we can actually ground truth it with this weather station because it has a rain gauge there.
The weather station went up close to the Wickersham Dome trailhead, which could be considered the gateway to the BLM's White Mountains National Recreation Area. Plum is also the race director for an annual ultra-distance ski, bike, and foot race that takes place in the rec area. He says he's received lots of positive feedback from people who use the trails regularly in the winter.
Yeah, actually, I have heard from quite a few people that were excited to hear about the installation of this weather station because a lot of people go up there, leave Fairbanks, park at the trailhead, and you never know how windy it's going to be. And usually it's the wind that catches people off guard.
Before now, the Weather Service wasn't gathering any data on the Elliott Highway between Fox and Live and Good. The new weather station updates hourly on Weather Underground, an online weather forecast provider. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Bioneers in Alaska, presenting practical sustainability strategies for Alaskans at its 9th annual conference, October 26th through the 28th at UAA. Bioneersinalaska.org. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Representative Don Young is running for his 21st term in Congress. He's running against long-shot candidate Sharon Cisna, who we heard from earlier this week. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, if Young wins re-election, he doesn't plan on changing his legislative ways.
If Representative Young wins and successfully completes his 21st term, he'll surpass former Senator Ted Stevens as the longest-serving Alaskan in Washington. The 79-year-old is currently the second-longest-serving Republican in the House, trailing Florida's Bill Young by a few months. That's because Don Young was first elected to Congress in a special election. He lost the preceding general election to Nick Begich, who died in a plane crash. Young says his 39 years in office are an asset. Longevity is just one attribute he says makes him suitable for another term.
Most of all, my diversity when it comes to the state and all that. This is not just Anchorage or Fairbanks. This is the whole state of Alaska.
That's a point Young loves to make, that he is an interior politician. And it's a point that rattles some Democratic operatives who worry their party is too focused on Anchorage and Juneau. His opponent, Sharon Cisna, lives in Anchorage. Young calls Fort Yukon his home, though he has a place in Anchorage as well. Cisna's campaign is a long shot by any measure, but that's not to say Young is taking it too lightly.
If I was to appear weak or I didn't have a big turnout, younger guys and the guys that want to take this job would say he's getting weaker, he's getting more mature, and you always have to worry about that. So I always plan, the next campaign is already being planned.
Young has the political savvy to keep as many people happy as possible. When asked what concrete plans he has for a 21st term, he spouted off a list of things he'd do, things that certainly will pique people's interests, like curtailing regulation, and specific proposals, like one for the state to try and take control of the national parks.
So it's more for Alaskans, not just for the tourists. I'm going to try to have some language that will take and expedite the process for Alaska Native people to be more capable of managing their own resources as the rest of the nation also.
Young knows people are constantly chattering about successors, and he says he has not found someone he's willing to clear the path for.
They want to be a congressman for just a short period of time and then become a United States senator or governor. And I'm saying, this is a job very important to Alaskans. That's one reason I've stayed in it, because I've enjoyed every day of it. I still enjoy the work.
Young says when he no longer enjoys it, it'll be time to call it quits. But he did not say when that might be. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Alaska Natives are meeting in Anchorage this week, and along with all the serious business of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, an Anchorage artist is bringing together people to paint, too. At the Elders and Youth Conference earlier this week, artist Philip Charette invited attendees to participate in a community art project that captures the spirit of the gatherings. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
In a corner of a conference room on the main floor of the Dena'ina Convention Center in downtown Anchorage, Philip Charette is washing and passing out paintbrushes.
Hundreds. Literally hundreds of paintbrushes.
Charette has sketched portraits of Native leaders from different regions of Alaska onto 5-foot by 8-foot panels.
Each of these panels represent one of the major linguistic groups and cultural groups in Alaska. We've got the Yupik people represented, the Tlingit people, the Inupiaq people, the Aleut people, and the Athabascan people.
And he's letting the public color in his sketches with paint.
There are people that are part Tlingit and part Inupiaq that are saying, I have to paint a little bit on the Inupiaq part, and I have to paint a little bit on the Tlingit part, and, I want to add some to this Athabascan part, too. You know, because we're very connected in a lot of ways.
Connecting young Alaska Natives to their culture is Charette's job. He runs the youth program at the Alaska Native Heritage Center. His program is based on research that shows Alaska Native youth who maintain a connection to their culture and traditions do better in school. Charette is also an artist whose masks, prints, and other creations have traveled to galleries throughout the country. Charette is Yupik. His mother comes from Western Alaska, and his French-Canadian father was in the military. He spent his childhood bouncing between Alaska and the lower 48, and between cultures. During the 1960s, he attended school at Elmendorf Air Force Base, where he says he was abused.
Back then, they did not like Natives at all. Yupik was my first language. I was beaten just about every day. I remember having to eat soap just because I spoke a dirty language. And I was left-handed. They beat my hand until I couldn't close it anymore. And I remember on a number of occasions being dragged down to the office by my hair and being called a dirty, filthy little Native boy by the teacher in front of the other kids.
Thankfully, Charette says, a lot has changed in Anchorage since those days. But he understands that young people today, particularly in urban areas, have their own challenges. This is Stacey Ivanoff's second time attending the Elders and Youth Conference. The 24-year-old lives in Anchorage, but is originally from Unalakleet. She's painting the Inupiaq portrait.
I am painting the rough, or darkening the rough. I'm the parkas that we use. We like to have light and dark roughs sewn together in the rough. But other places, they like having white roughs. But it looks familiar.
So if you wanted to work with blue, you can bring the blue and bring it really tight in.
Nearby, Ridge Smith is using blue paint to color in a cuspic on the Yupik portrait.
I think it's pretty cool what he's doing, letting everybody paint.
Smith, who lives in Fairbanks but is originally from Dot Lake near Togue, is attending the Elders and Youth Conference and AFN with the Tanana Chiefs Conference for the first time.
My mom's Athabascan, but she lives in Fairbanks, but she brings the culture back with her, so I visit my village too a lot.
Charette says young people like Ivanoff and Smith have new opportunities that past generations did not, but they face the challenge of living in several worlds.
And I think that's part of what this whole project is about, is living in not just two worlds, but multiple worlds, and making an adjustment, thinking about the core things that hold us together and make us move forward in a very united way. Because if we move forward in a united way, we become much stronger inside.
When the paintings are complete, Charette will write at the bottom of each portrait the core values that span across the native cultures of Alaska. Things like,
it's respecting your elders, it's very important for us to respect elders. Knowing who you are is very, very important. I think a lot of people sort of in this, especially in Anchorage, have sort of lost touch with their language and their heritage. And it's really sort of important for them to really be connected with that.
Charette says once the public is done filling in between the lines, he'll put the finishing touches on the paintings, and all five of them will eventually hang somewhere in the Anchorage community as a symbol of Alaska Native unity. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. The Kinnick Arm Bridge would create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.